This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. You come to a Boston hospital to get the best in specialized medical care. But where do you go to get the best primary care? Those doctors are already in short supply, and the problem's getting worse. A new national study released this week pins the blame on medical schools, including several Massachusetts medical schools, saying those schools are missing the mark when it comes to fulfilling the, quote, social mission of medicine. We'll find out exactly what that means and get reaction from med school officials a little later this hour. But first, President Obama will make his first address from the Oval Office tonight, and the medium is definitely a large part of the message. While presidents before him have used Oval Office speeches to discuss matters of war, Obama will use his bully pulpit to discuss the Gulf oil spill, as he did earlier today before military personnel at the Naval Air Station in Pensacola, Florida.
Yes, this is an unprecedented environmental disaster. It's the worst in our nation's history. But we're going to continue to meet it with an unprecedented federal response and recovery effort, the largest in our nation's history. This is an assault on our shores, and we're going to fight back with everything that we've got.
Well, Boston Globe reporter Erin Aylworth just returned from the Gulf last week, and she joins us now to talk about what's expected in Obama's speech tonight and in other oil-related action on Capitol Hill. Erin, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me again.
Well, before we get straight to the president and what's expected in his speech tonight, I want to talk about a little bit about what's going on in Congress, because also today, executives from some of the largest oil companies in the world, including BP America, took part in what seems to be now a ritual that's more and more common on the Hill, and that's the congressional grilling over all this Gulf oil. Here's Massachusetts Congressman Ed Markey at the hearing.
We now know the oil industry and the government agency tasked with regulating them determined that there was a zero chance that this kind of undersea disaster could ever happen. When you believe that there is zero chance of a disaster happening, you do zero disaster planning.
Well, on that note, on zero disaster planning, Markey seemed to go on to talk about a bill that he hopes could take care of some of this problem. It's the oil SOS bill. Tell us a little bit about that.
So, yeah, Markey brought this up when we were in the Gulf. He attended a field hearing in Chalmette, Louisiana last week. And basically, it's legislation. They're drafting it now, as I understand, and they hope to introduce it soon. It's calling for about $50 million a year in oil company royalties to pay for developing better safety and cleanup tools.
And the money would come from federal sources or from the oil companies themselves?
No, from oil company royalties.
Okay. So this is the latest in Congressman Markey's very active involvement in the oil spill so far. He's also been kind of one of the forces behind getting those original pictures from at the bottom of the Gulf so we could see all that oil, and these continuous congressional hearings almost. But on this oil SOS bill, does it seem like it has a pretty good chance of passing given the current climate in Congress?
I mean, I think Markey hopes that it does.
Okay. Well, so now on to the president's speech tonight. It's been 8 weeks. It's kind of hard to believe it's been that long since the oil started spewing in the Gulf. What do you think, or what are you hearing from folks that President Obama needs to say from the Oval Office?
You know, I think they're viewing this as something of a pivotal moment that maybe will help rejuvenate some people who have been working on this spill since it happened. It's been almost 2 months now. I'm essentially hearing that, you know, Obama needs to use this as a learning point and bring up, you know, a national energy policy, getting some climate legislation passed. So I'd be surprised if he didn't do that. You know, some are also questioning what he's going to say about reforms at MMS, the Mineral Management Service, or you know, maybe amendments to OPA 90, which is that Oil Pollution Act, and trying to basically modernize things.
So using it sort of as a springboard to push forward these other issues. The White House itself in a press release was calling it an inflection point in this Gulf oil disaster, which seems to be kind of a more rosy take on where the president's
public stance is right now, or how people are seeing what this moment means for him.
You know, I was talking to a BC professor, Zig Pletter. He's an environmental law professor, and he was telling me that he sees this as sort of the Obama administration recognizing that they're getting a black eye, over this whole situation, and so realizing that, you know, going ahead and making this address. And, you know, Zig was basically telling me that he thinks that the president needs to focus on the future. He can't really go back and look at the past, so he's got to, you know, focus ahead and how do we clean this up and make it right.
Did he think that that President Obama was doing the right thing by making this speech from the Oval Office versus in front of the oil-slickened Gulf?
Well, you know, I think the Oval Office probably carries some weight. I mean, you know, you've got that nice big presidential seal in the background, and so there's probably some significance to that. Whether or not he would have been better served to be in the Gulf, well, he's been down there, what, 4 times mm-hmm. at this point? So maybe they're trying to use a little bit of the White House reputation
to maybe shift the focus back to what the president can do versus what he hasn't done so far.
Exactly.
Well, that's Erin Aylworth. She's reporter for the Boston Globe. Thank you very much. Well, now we're going to turn to a different Gulf response story, one that comes from right here in Massachusetts. Researchers at UMass Amherst have developed an iPhone application called MOGO that uses a variety of the phone's technologies to help track and respond to all that wildlife that has been damaged and covered by the oil spill. Kurt Griffin is a professor of wildlife ecology at UMass Amherst and helped develop the new iPhone application. Professor Griffin, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you. Nice to be with you.
So why don't you just describe to us what MOGO is and how the app actually works?
Sure. MOGO stands for Mobile Gulf Observatory, and it's an app that my colleagues and I here at UMass developed to turn your iPhone and you into a citizen scientist, helping to track the environmental effects of the oil spill down in the Gulf and also to help wildlife experts find and rescue stranded and oiled wildlife.
And I was looking at some screenshots of what the MOGO app looks like. And if you want to see those screenshots and maybe even download the app, there's a link to it on our website, wbur.org/Boston. But these screenshots are really interesting. The first one showed, you know, there's a list of types of wildlife, birds, marine mammals, etc. And the next thing is you can actually take a photograph of a bird, say, that's been hurt or covered by oil. And then what happens?
That's right. Well, not only do we have the different wildlife species on there, from marine mammals to turtles to birds, but also we're interested in tarballs and also oil slicks on water and also oiled coastal habitats like marshes and beaches. And what it does, it allows you to take a photo of one of those objects, and your iPhone automatically puts in GPS coordinates to that photo, so it locates you geographically. And then it gives you the option of uploading that to our MOGO database here at UMass Amherst, where it will be screened by wildlife and fisheries experts, and also that database will be made public to other scientists around the world that can get access to the database. But most importantly, and what we want to really stress, is that if there's an oiled animal, there's also a pop-up screen that says, do you want to phone the wildlife hotline? And if you hit yes, it will immediately put you in contact with the wildlife hotline so you can report that stranded wildlife. And this is critically important because the hotline deploys the wildlife experts to go out to that beach and rescue that injured animal and bring it back into the clinic for treatment.
I see. So people using this, the MOGO app down in the Gulf could ostensibly call directly to one of these wildlife rescue groups and hopefully within that same day have that bird come and get picked up and taken to a rescue center of some kind.
Absolutely. In fact, it has to be done quite quickly because, as you can imagine, these animals are quite distressed. And so what this does, it puts thousands of citizens' eyes out there to help locate these animals and to get the rescue networks, the stranding network wildlife experts out there to rescue them.
Sounds like you're imagining sort of this army of citizen scientists out there, as you said, documenting where they're seeing these impacts. But you also said that the data is being uploaded to a database at UMass Amherst. So I'm wondering, that's great for scientists there, but how is it possible that all this data could be used immediately for scientists who are down in the Gulf region?
Right. Well, certainly the phone call to the wildlife hotline is critically important so those individuals can be deployed. But then the photos coming in with the GPS locations, right now the hotline doesn't have a means by which to receive those photos and those data. So we're working with the different agencies down there in order to do that. And we have a partner down there, the Louisiana Bucket Brigade, that is doing an oil spill mapping system as well. But again, this is an open public database, so we're working directly with the different federal agencies to make sure we get these photos and these geolocations to them in a way that they can use them and facilitate using them.
So it sounds like a really great idea of sending people out there who've already got iPhones and live there to be essentially data gatherers in places that scientists may not be able to go and faster than they may be able to get there. So,
right.
But I'm wondering, what was the idea or the inspiration behind MOGO? Were you using it for some other kind of scientific research?
Yes, my two colleagues here at UMass, Charlie Schweik and Deepak Gunnison, they were developing a similar type of application in order to track invasive plant species here in Massachusetts. As you know, we have many different invasive plants here in Massachusetts. So it was a citizen scientist initiative in order to get more eyes out there to locate these plants so that conservation and management action could be taken.
And is that how you were able to get the MOGO app up and running so quickly?
Yes. It was developed in less than a week.
Do you think that this kind of tapping of crowdsourcing information and the ability to have essentially thousands of unpaid but enthusiastic data gatherers out there is the future for the kind of like ecological research that you and your colleagues are doing?
We think so. I mean, I think it's another option. Now, certainly we have the systematic surveys that are being done by agency people, but again, they're too few. The area is too expansive for them to cover such a large area. So there's several citizen science projects going on across the U.S., across the world, and so it provides a very valuable source of data to help scientists interpret and understand these ecological effects.
Well, that's Kurt Griffin. He is professor of wildlife ecology at UMass Amherst and also one of the developers of MOGO, the Mobile Gulf Observatory app available on the iPhone. There's a link to that on our website, wbur.org/Boston. Professor Griffin, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
And when we come back, there's a new study on the nation's medical schools. And according to this one, Boston area institutions are not at the top. We'll tell you why. That's next. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.